You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
InPlay Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. InPlay Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
It's week number 7 in the National Football League. You're listening to the William Hill NFL podcast. It's Dave Kellner here in the studio in Leeds with, live from San Francisco, on the line right now, the host of the Beating the Book podcast, Gil Alexander, joins me to give us insight ahead to week number 7. First of all, a good morning to you stateside. Gil, how are you doing, sir?
Dave, I'm doing very well as the American ambassador to the National Football League. As a token of my appreciation, I give you the Jacksonville Jaguars once again, sir.
I was going to say we're starting with that game, Gil. We'll get stuck into that one in due course, but you're treating us, Gil. You are treating us at the moment. The Buffalo Bills against the Jacksonville Jaguars at Wembley this weekend. Just send any other teams, Gil.
Well, it's the third year in a row the Jaguars are coming there. I think the answer to that question is the Jaguars. It's better for that franchise to have a game in England than it is for them to have a home game, I think, revenue-wise. That could be the story.
Yeah, I think you probably bang on the money there, Gil. Quick reflection on what we saw last night. The Seattle Seahawks resurrecting their season, winning in San Francisco by 20 points to 3 in the end, Gil. Colin Kaepernick had a disaster out there, and the Seahawks have been threatening maybe a breakout performance. Didn't put many points on the board, but comprehensively beat San Francisco in San Francisco last night.
Comprehensively is a beautiful way to say it. I have two major observations from the game last night, and they'll be no surprise to anybody. One, you know, my buddy Marco D'Angelo, who's on my podcast, who's a 35-year Vegas veteran, likes to say no team is as good as they look 1 week or as bad as they look 1 week. And I think the Seahawks are a great example of a team whose death has been exaggerated. They're still among the NFL's elite. Let's not pronounce them dead yet. Again, all four of their losses featured fourth quarter leads. So while they're 3-4 now, you know, a break here and a break there, we're talking about a 6-1 or 7-0 or 5-2 team. So they'll be all right. The other observation is just what you alluded to, which is Colin Kaepernick. Dave, I've never seen out patterns overthrown with the passion that I saw Colin Kaepernick throw the ball last night. Bullets into the stands. And I actually said while watching the game, I go, he may hurt somebody. And you know what he did? He hurt somebody. Someone needed medical attention on the sidelines. I'm not even making that up. It was just unbelievable how bad he looks.
Indeed, indeed. Let's hope things get better for the San Francisco 49ers, who, of course, in the UK, one of the biggest franchises, Gil, in terms of support over here.
Yeah, it's a shame. They just don't have a player personnel person in place now, so the future does not look bright.
Let's get stuck into this weekend, Gil. The televised matches, 5 of them on the podcast being covered this weekend. And we start with that international series match. The Buffalo Bills at the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1:30 p.m. UK start time, this one. The Bills are 5-11 on the money line. The Jags in the market at 9-5. And this spread is currently 4.5. -4.5, the Buffalo Bills at 10-11. The Jacksonville Jaguars +4.5 in the market at 10-11. Let's start with the Buffalo Bills, Gil. At the start of the season, this team had scope to be decent or looked to be decent. They've fallen to 3-3, though, after losses to the Giants and last week to Cincinnati, with that 1-point win against the Tennessee Titans sandwiched in between. They're going through a personnel crisis as well. Tyrod Taylor, the quarterback, questionable for Sunday's match, and that's an area where they really need some continuity and consistency. Carlos Williams hasn't travelled either, And there's suddenly murmurs of discontent within the organization.
Yeah, they've had even more injuries than that. You know, LeSean McCoy, their big trade acquisition in the offseason, he hasn't played the full season, although he's back in the lineup as of last week. Sammy Watkins, their standout wide receiver, he's been dinged up. And this will be E.J. Manuel. No Tyrod Taylor for this game. E.J. Manuel is in for the Bills. So, yeah, I mean, they've fought with injuries. They're not the team that's been dinged the worst with injuries. That honor belongs to the Green Bay Packers, who are undefeated but have lost the most games due to injury. So the Bills are, you know, at 3-3, when you step back for a second, probably where we thought they'd be at the beginning of the season. Maybe not as good as we thought they were after week one. Maybe not as bad as they looked in subsequent weeks. But 3-3 is about where they ought to be. And I think they're a better football team than the Jaguars, who are very one-dimensional, which we'll get into in a second. But I think the Bills' defense here will get the job done.
I just mentioned those murmurs of discontent. They've come from Mario Williams, their star defensive end. And Marcel Darius has echoed the sentiments of Williams. Rex Ryan suddenly got a different set of circumstances to deal with now. A new set of issues, Gil. I wonder how that's going to affect the organization.
Yeah, I always wonder if that sort of thing is media playing up a story, or if it's really going to affect the football team. As the phrase goes, the best tonic for all of that is winning. And I think you go to London, you get a win under your belt. Somehow I don't think we're going to hear too much about that stuff anymore. That's my hunch.
Okay, this line sets at 4.5 currently. You mentioned Jacksonville and their problems, Gil, and them being a one-dimensional side. 1-5 in the AFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Blake Bortles under center, clearly a quarterback with a lot of talent, but he's not doing a very good job of protecting the ball at the moment.
Yeah, you know, I wonder how much of that we can pin on Bortles. Obviously, we have to pin some of it on Bortles. It's him that's doing it. But, I mean, here's a stat for you. There have been 141 touchdowns in the NFL this year on the ground, rushing touchdowns, 141. The Jaguars have exactly zero of them. They don't get any production that way from the backfield. So Bortles is forced to do a lot, and these stats provided by the great Mike Sando over at ESPN are staggering. Blake Bortles accounts for 81.4% of Jacksonville's offensive yards. It's the highest percentage for any one player in the league. He's accounted for 100% of their touchdowns, either through air or through ground. 45.8% of their rushing first downs have been provided by the quarterback, Bortles. That's the highest of any quarterback. So he does everything for this football team. And maybe, you know, he's still a young quarterback. Maybe it's a little too much to ask. It's certainly better for a defense who is planning to play the Jaguars, certainly easier for them to scheme against that, certainly easier for them to plan when they don't have as many weapons to think about. It's not as if you're facing, say, a team like the Eagles, where you have all these players to account for that can do damage. When you're playing the Jaguars, makes life a lot easier for a Rex Ryan, who's already very adept at developing a defensive game plan.
Incredible numbers there, Gil. And coming to London was the death knell for Miami coach Joe Philbin. I wonder if the same fate awaits Gus Bradley here. What do you think? If Buffalo beats Jacksonville, is his head on the block?
Yeah, I had a friend, or I have a friend, who used to bring girlfriends out to San Francisco to visit me, and they'd never make it past the trip to San Francisco for some reason. So we had a little joke amongst ourselves about how San Francisco was the death knell for his girlfriends. And I wonder if London is the death knell for NFL coaches. Of course, part of that is that there's a bye the following week, and it gives teams a moment to pause and say, all right, what are we doing here? But Gus Bradley, and don't hold me to this might be inaccurate because I might be a week behind on this, but I think as the Jaguars coach, I believe he's 8-30, something like that, straight up. And once you hear that stat, you're like, whoa, what did you say he was? It's just terrible. And you'd think by now the Jaguars would be improved. They're not. They're still the same sorry outfit they always were. And, you know, we can't get past this game without mentioning one thing. Someone solicited a sleep expert at the beginning of this past week. And they said that the Bills' travel plans were far more conducive to playing well this coming Sunday than that of the Jaguars. In other words, the Bills traveled to London this past Monday. So they will have slept six nights in London by game time. The Jaguars decided not to travel until today. They are just arriving in England today.
Wow.
So only two nights for the Jaguars, sleep-wise. Now, the Jaguars, who have been in London for games the past 2 years, I should mention, they tried it the Bills' way the last two seasons, and they got crushed 42-10 and 31-17 by the Niners and Cowboys, respectively, those last 2 years. So they're trying it a different way, but we've had sleep experts weigh in and say their circadian rhythms are going to be terrible for this game. So if you believe in that kind of thing, it's also a plus for the Bills.
I know, Gil, in previous podcasts, you've been tentative in putting up a selection in an international series game. Have you got a lean here with that line currently at 4.5?
Yeah, I'd lean Bills. At six, I would have probably stayed away, but at 4.5 now, I'd lean with the Bills. I think the better football team. I don't like to bet on games that have international travel, you know, transatlantic travel, but I'd go Bills here.
Okay, the Buffalo Bills, the lean in the early game on Sunday. 5 p.m. UK time, we have the New York Jets at the New England Patriots. The Jets 29-10 on the money line, the Patriots 5-19. This spread currently sits at 8. The New York Jets plus 8 is 10-11. The New England Patriots minus 8, 10-11. The total points line is set at 48. The under is 10-11. The over is 10-11. Intriguing clash, this one, Gil. It's a divisional matchup in the AFC East. The Patriots currently sitting at 5-0, and the Jets at 4-1. Before we get into the matchup, Gil, has there been any line movement stateside?
There has been. It was 9.5 at the beginning of the week, and now it's 8. So the money has come in on the Jets through the week. This was one of two games where I do a guessing line show on Monday where I, without having seen the lines, guess what the lines ought to be, and then I am either surprised or not surprised by what is revealed. And this was one of two games where I thought it's too many points for the Jets. I mean, I really like the Jets getting all those points. I guess whenever there's a Patriots game, the first thing we should say is, under Bill Belichick, it's the old stat I like to give here, Dave, so forgive me for being boring, but under Bill Belichick at home and his career as coach of the Patriots, when a 7-point favorite or less, are 47-21-4 against the spread. But when it's 7.5 or more, which we have here at 8, just 22-28 against the spread. So one of those things also where trends favor the opponent, if for no other reason, because if Bill Belichick has a big lead, he really has no interest in showing the rest of his playbook. He's fine just winning. So even that trend would favor a Jets play here.
Yeah, I like this one from a personal perspective as well, Gil, with the line when it was 9, 9.5. It's now down to 8, but still looks to offer value on the Jets side of the ball. Looking forward to seeing this Patriots offense go up against the number one ranked defense in the league as well. It's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top in that particular battle.
Yeah, I mean, you got a top five Jets defense, a top five Patriots offense. Something's got to give, as they say. And, you know, even as I gave you those Bill Belichick stats, I thought to myself, well, Tom Brady can make anybody look stupid, so brace yourselves, right? It's Tom Brady. And to your point about the Jets defense, I would like to go back and say, okay, how does Brady perform against great defenses? Well, last year, Brady was 5-2, straight up, 18 touchdowns, 7 interceptions against top 10 defenses in expected points added per game, the advanced stat. He also had a league-leading total QBR against those top defenses. So if there's ever a quarterback who doesn't cower against those types of units, it's Brady. But and by the way, this year they've played one top 10 defense in expected points added, have the Patriots. It was the Steelers,
yep.
And Brady went ahead and threw 4 touchdown passes and no picks. So, you know, it is Brady. On the other hand, the Jets historically under Rex Ryan prior to this season always played the Patriots well, and I think Todd Bowles may be a better defensive brain than Rex Ryan, the current head coach of the New York Jets. So I really like the Jets getting a mess of points here. The other way to look at it, I'm sorry for ranting here, but just so I don't forget, We have a survivor pool here in the U.S. that people play. You just pick a team every week to advance to win, no spread involved. And if you, and the only catch is you can't use the same team twice. And I, what I said on my podcast is for people who still have the Patriots, the probably the best team, the, you know, the biggest quote unquote lock in the NFL, I'm not sure I'd use the Patriots this week. I think there's a slight possibility that if the Patriots were to stumble at all this year, this might be the game.
You mentioned Todd Bowles there and Rex Ryan as well. Very different coaches. And Bowles has been quoted as saying this game will not make or break his team. Rex Ryan, when he came up against the Patriots, a lot more outspoken, intense and vocal. Different. It's going to be a different dynamic with Todd Bowles at the helm rather than Rex Ryan this time around.
Yeah, I mean, Rex Ryan's a bit of a raving lunatic, right? he's not quite Jim Harbaugh in that way, but he is like his father, Buddy Ryan. Buddy Ryan was a head coach in the NFL. Buddy Ryan was known for just shooting his mouth off and never winning big games in the NFL. He was never the Eagles under Buddy Ryan never advanced in the playoffs. Rex Ryan is very much like his father, not quite as volatile, but he's got things to say. His mouth runs, and thus far, Rex Ryan hasn't gotten a team to the Super Bowl either. Todd Bowles' football father, if you will, is Joe Gibbs. Joe Gibbs, who won three Super Bowls with the Washington Redskins with three different quarterbacks. Todd Bowles was a starting Super Bowl champion safety for the second of those Super Bowl winning teams in Washington. And Gibbs is very calm demeanor, very dignified guy. Bowles is exactly the same way, and he'll even admit to you he's cut in that cloth.
Just before we wrap on this game as well, I just wanted to ask you if you think from a situational standpoint here whether there's any swing either way. New England having come off that Deflategate revenge match with the win against Indianapolis, that fourth down play ruined Indianapolis's chances against New England, and the Jets came out of the bye and beat Washington 34-20. Is this a spot where either team has an advantage?
I guess if you are looking for something there, it would be the New England quote-unquote letdown spot after the Deflategate game. I think the Jets had an interesting game last week in that they turned the ball over three times in the first half against the Redskins and really allowed the Redskins to stay in that game for a half. And then they just came out in the second half. They scored like 17 points in the first 5 minutes of the second half and cruised to the finish. And I do think New England, in a primetime game, a game that they won't admit that they were extra special up for, but they were. And I think if you're looking for something, probably advantage Jets in the intangible department as well there.
Okay, so the Jets, confident selection, Gill plus the 8?
Yeah, pretty confident. I like it.
Me too.
As confident as you can be, DK, when you're going up against the Patriots, but confident. Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's move on. Let's have a look at the Dallas Cowboys at the New York Giants. This 8:25 p.m. start time on Sunday evening here in the UK. The Cowboys 31-20, the Giants 4-7. That's the money line. On the spread, the Cowboys plus 3.5 at 10-11. The New York Giants minus 3.5 at 10-11. This match, huge implications as far as the battle for superiority in the NFC East is concerned. The Giants currently 3-3, and the Dallas Cowboys, following three straight losses, are now 2-3 in the division. Gil, the bye for the Dallas Cowboys probably came at the perfect time. They're just trying to get in position for a playoff spot for when Tony Romo and Dez Bryant return. They want to be in the mix, don't they, Gil, and not to have their season completely wiped out.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think that's their, you know, what they're thinking. Just stay afloat, if you will, until Romo's return. Dez should be back much sooner than that. Dez, if not back this week, probably next week or the week after. Tony Romo, not till week 11 or 12 at the earliest. So still a long way to go to get Romo back, but the bye did come at the right time. If you saw the Cowboys play the Patriots a couple weeks ago, you knew as you were watching that game they had to get away from Brandon Whedon. By the way, I sent out a video earlier, and this is one of my picks as well in my pick six. I like the Cowboys here getting 3.5 points with Matt Cassel as their starting quarterback. It's not really a endorsement of Cassel so much as it is an endorsement of Whedon not playing.
I know that Tony Romo obviously is a big influence as well, Gil. You've mentioned Matt Cassel stepping in for Brandon Whedon. But, I mean, Castle's attempting to become the first Cowboys quarterback to win a game other than Tony Romo since Stephen Magee against Philadelphia back in 2010. Romo became the starter in 2006. In the games that he's missed, Dallas has lost the last five and the 5-11 in total. So he is just stating the flaming obvious here, Gil. But he is the key cog in the Dallas machine, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know what's funny about that is he's gotten so much flack over his career. I'm a Redskins fan. I'm genetically predisposed to hate the Cowboys, our chief rival. But even I, through the years, I'm like, why do they hate Romo so much? He's the only thing keeping you guys together. So for so many years, the Cowboys had no offensive line. And now they have the best offensive line in football, and Romo is the key. And a couple things. One, before I get to the actual stat, to show how, you know, to give perspective on how much Romo means to the team, you mentioned they Cowboys have not won a game that another quarterback has started since 2010. And you mentioned the name Stephen Magee. Dave, I have not only no recollection of that game, I don't even know who Stephen Magee is. Like, I can't even come up with who that is. I guess he played at Texas A&M vaguely, but like I don't remember him playing for the Cowboys. Anyway, advanced stats, we talk about total QBR, which is ESPN's metric for overall quarterback play. 40 quarterbacks have at least 600 pass attempts since 2012. 40. And when we rate on total QBR, Brandon Whedon, who had been playing for the Cowboys in Romo's stead, is ranked 40th of those 40. Matt Cassel ranks, are you ready for this, 38th right of those 40. So it's not a big step up. Tony Romo, as a point of comparison, ranks 8th. So that's how much of a drop-off it is for the Cowboys in quarterback play as they try to, as you point out, stay afloat until Romo's return.
And you mentioned already that you like Dallas in this matchup, plus 3.5. I look at a lot of talk about Dez Bryant and Tony Romo and their injuries. I'm looking at these New York Giants injuries, particularly in the secondary. I think they might struggle in that area this week. And Dallas healthier defensively than they have been in the early part of the season. Greg Hardy's likely to get pressure on Eli Manning and Randy Gregory back as well. I tend to look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, that's the key to my play here. I mean, one of the things, I sent out a video for Will Hill, and I'm taking the Cowboys plus 3.5, and it's a very mechanical play. It's an NFC East game. The line is typically 3. If, you know, one of the things where I go into these games without even thinking it through, you're predisposed to take the team that's plus 3. Here you're getting plus 3.5. So it's a play on the Cowboys, but you just hit on what the key for me is. One of the keys. I do think Kristen Michael will make an impact in the backfield behind Matt Cassel, the Cowboys going with a new running back that they acquired from the Seahawks earlier in the season on first and second down. So I think Kristen Michael will make an impact, but it's that pass rush. And the Eagles last week on Monday night, we talked about the Cowboys coming off a bye with 2 weeks rest here. The Giants had the short week coming off the Monday night game against the Eagles. The Eagles provided a nice blueprint for people to play the Giants, which is they pressured Eli Manning. You know, prior to last week, Eli Manning wasn't getting pressured at all by opposing defense. Well, the Eagles brought the house on 29% of Manning's dropbacks, and they won that game quite easily. And I think with the Cowboys, they've got the personnel to apply pressure to Eli Manning, and if they can grab a lead early, they can continue to do that. I think the only way this goes different is if the Giants somehow blast up to an early lead, then it sort of changes things. But I think that's the key for the Cowboys. Bring the heat on defense, which they have the personnel for. Greg Hardy is a real difference maker. I think that's the way to go for the Cowboys.
On to primetime. Primetime, the Philadelphia Eagles at the Carolina Panthers is the late game Sunday night, early Monday morning UK time. 12:30 a.m. on Monday, this one. The Eagles 6-4 on the money line. The Panthers 10-17. The Eagles plus 3 on the spread, even money. The Panthers minus 3 with the extra juice there at 5-6. And the total points line is set at 45.5. 10-11 the under, and the over is 10-11. The Panthers 5-0 and chasing their best start in the history, up against the 3-3 Philadelphia Eagles. This is prime time late Sunday night. And Gil, we talked about the Panthers on last week's podcast. The game against Seattle had the opportunity to produce a watershed moment for the franchise, and the grit they showed to come from behind and win that game was superb. Cam Newton hit Greg Olsen late on for a touchdown, just 32 seconds left in the match. And the Panthers, for the first time, Gil, showed that they belonged in the conversation when talk turns to the top teams in the National Football League.
And they're doing it by having Cam Newton and a stout defense, because Lord knows Cam Newton doesn't have many other weapons besides Greg Olsen. I have a show called The Megapod on Thursday. I have a panel of experts who give their picks, and we go through the primetime games, and everybody gives their pick. And two out of the three guys on my show, the ones who are the staples of the show, they both loved the Eagles in this spot. So that'll be the sort of pick I give in this game, because I don't have an opinion. Mm. For me, this is probably where the spread is. But the guys on my show love the Eagles here. You know, the Panthers have played, I guess the interesting thing here is they've played 16 regular season, their last 16 regular season games extended into last season, so throughout the playoff games. But the last 16, which is a full NFL season staggered, they have won 9 games in a row now, and the 7 games prior to that, they went 0-6-1. So it's a bizarro stretch of 16 games. I mean, no one has an actual calendar NFL season like that. But that's what the Panthers are doing, and in this 9-game winning streak, that defense has allowed just 15.2 points per game, second in defensive expected points allowed over that stretch. If you're just giving up 15 points a game, you're going to win a lot of football games, and maybe all 9 of them, which the Panthers have done.
Mm. I think Luke Kuechly is key, isn't he? I feel he's the leader on this team. I know that Cam Newton steals many of the headlines, but he's the man.
He is, and this season the Panthers, you know, now with Kuechly back in the lineup, they're 5th in defensive expected points allowed per game, but the Eagles are 3rd in that category. So I think the real story of this game is, you think of the Eagles as an offensive team, maybe you think about Cam Newton a lot on the Panthers, but really it's two really stout defensive units going at each other, with the Eagles really having forced tons of turnovers this year, 16 turnovers the Phillies D has forced, second most in the league. So the Panthers have to be cognizant of that, because in that 0-6-1 stretch prior to this 9-game winning streak, the Panthers' signature loss, if you will, was against these Eagles. And that's what everybody's yeah. talking about heading into this game, is that the Eagles beat the Panthers last year 45-21, and it wasn't even that close. At one point, they led by 38 points. It was a Monday night game last week. You know how I said I don't remember Stephen McGee of the Cowboys? I don't remember this game either, Dave. I have no recollection of this. But Cam was sacked 9 times in that game. Cam committed a career-high 4 turnovers in that game, including 2 on the first 3 snaps. All of that to say, it's front of mind for the Panthers. You don't really think about games from previous years, but that one will leave a mark.
Yeah, I've not listened to the Megapod yet. I presume that the chaps that you have on the Megapod, Gil, were suggesting this is a bad spot for Carolina, given that they've come off that huge win against the Seattle Seahawks, and it's going to be maybe difficult, even though this game is prime time, for Ron Rivera to get his players performing at that peak once again.
You are sharp. That is exactly what they said. They said that the Panthers will have a bit of a letdown. And the other thing that they say simultaneously is that the Eagles have found their running game. And because they've found their running game, that allows for Sam Bradford to flourish in that offense. And the Eagles have rushed for at least 100 yards in all 3 of their wins this season. They've been held under 100 rush yards in all 3 of their losses. That is standard for any NFL team. But the key is DeMarco Murray. Murray, 192 yards over the last 2 weeks after totaling 47 in his first 3, so while also missing one, by the way, with a hamstring injury. So that, they say, will allow Sam Bradford, if they can continue doing that, to flourish. But again, it's the Panthers' defense. I don't think that's, you know, a lock for them to continue running well on the ground myself.
And one thing we've not mentioned, you just brought up Sam Bradford there. He's got a bad case of the picks at the moment. I mean, he's throwing plenty of interceptions, isn't he?
Yeah. We have words for that kind of thing. When you fumble a lot, we call it fumbleitis or the dropsies. But yes, with picks, he has a bad case of the picks. 9 this year already for Bradford. That's the second most picks in the league. He has been blitzed at the second lowest rate. We talk about Eli Manning in the previous game. Bring the house against him. That's what affects him. Well, Sam Bradford's been blitzed at the second lowest rate in football this year. Just 15.5% of his dropbacks have they blitzed opposing defenses. And he's been pressured at the lowest rate, just 14.6% of the season, and he still has 9 picks. So he has not been good in any way that you can slice it up.
We're recording this on Friday afternoon, UK time, Friday morning there, stateside, Gil. Do you see this line settling at 3, or do you think it might move to 3.5, perhaps?
I don't think it's going anywhere. It takes an awful lot of money to get it off the key number of 3, and I know it is extra juice on the Panthers right now. But if anything, I think this settles right into 3, and I think that's what it's going to be at kickoff.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. And finally, we come to the Baltimore Ravens at the Arizona Cardinals, which is the primetime game, Monday Night Football, here in the UK, 12:30 a.m. on Tuesday morning. The Ravens on the money line 3-1, the Cardinals 1-4, and the spread, the Ravens plus 8 is 10-11, the Cardinals minus 8, 10-11. I think we should actually start this by talking about the Baltimore Ravens and, more specifically, Gil, their schedule, which has just been absolutely brutal. I don't know who maps these out, Gil, but they've got it in for the Ravens this season.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, it's tough to, you know, you don't want to make excuses in the NFL because the scheduling is the scheduling and it's done very democratically, if you will. But the Ravens really did get screwed this year. This is their 4th game out west already. This is the 7th game of the season. They're 1-5. But to have 4 games out west in your first 7, that's a real tough road to hoe. Now, they're going to try something different this week. Coach John Harbaugh made the adjustment. The first time they came out west, they stayed on the road following their season opener at Denver, and then they lost to the Raiders the following week, and they stayed out west. This time they flew back to Baltimore, and now they're flying back out to face the Arizona Cardinals after having faced the Niners last week in the Bay Area. So they're trying a little something different. We'll see if it affects them.
I hate to say it, Gil, but it looks like their season is done, doesn't it, at 1-5. No team has made the playoffs under the current 16-game format when starting the season 1-5. They have pride to play for, but the likelihood of them advancing to the postseason done and dusted this early in the campaign.
Yeah, and it's tough because the 5 losses have been by a combined 22 points. So, you know, on the one hand, they're a missed field goal away from being 0-6. On the other hand, they're only 22 points away, divided by 5, you know, from getting a few wins under their belt. So it is tough, and the schedule didn't help them, and they're 1-5, and you're right, historically it's never happened before. I don't expect it to with this team to make the playoffs. And now they come into Arizona in a primetime game on a Monday night. Arizona's coming off a loss, and the Cardinals have this amazing ability to get the ball downfield. First of all, we talked about Colin Kaepernick a second ago and how bad he looked last night. Well, Colin Kaepernick shredded the Ravens defense last week. I mean, really, he shredded them. Season high 340 yards, and he completed 3 passes of 50 or more. And if you saw Kaepernick play last night, you're like, oh my God, the Ravens must be horrible. Well, they are. And Arizona comes in to face them, 6.7 yards per play on offense is the best in the NFL, and 8.7 yards per pass attempt, which is second best in the NFL. That's not a recipe the Ravens are looking forward to.
The Cardinals, by the way, 15-4 in Arizona under Bruce Arians, but they did lose 24-22 at home to St. Louis in week number 4. They've also lost 4 straight against the Ravens as well, since winning the first meeting between the two franchises back in 1997. 8 is a lot of points, though, Gil, isn't it? I just keep looking at this number and thinking eight's quite a lot for a primetime game.
It is. That's the one thing that concerns you, obviously. The point spread is the great equalizer. But this is the other game when I did my guessing line show. At the time, it was 7.5. And this was the other game I had a first impression of where I was like, oh, I really kind of like Arizona, even given the 7.5. And Much of that is because, but you're right, it's a lot of points, but much of my thinking is because I know Arizona to have a great deep passing game, and let's back that up with the numbers here against the Ravens. Carson Palmer, the last 2 weeks, 4 of 5 for 168 yards on throws that travel at least 30 yards past the line of scrimmage. Now, he was 0 for 8 before that, but he drew 2 huge pass interference penalties in doing so as well. So the Cardinals, and Bruce Arians believes in this, they like to spread the field. They like to go deep, and Palmer is extremely adept at succeeding in that passing game. Counter side of that argument, Baltimore Ravens defense, they've allowed 6 of 12 completions, 50% of balls that travel at least 30 yards past the line of scrimmage, complete against them. So not a good matchup on paper for the Ravens. But yes, intangible-wise, human being-wise, it's a Monday night game. You got to figure if the Ravens are going to be up for any game, it's going to be a game in front of a national audience. I just think they'll have no answer for the barrage on Arizona's offense.
Arizona -8, the pick then for Gil. Let's finish off, as we always do, Gil, with your 5 top picks this weekend in the National Football League.
Well, I think we've given 3 of them, which are the Cardinals that we just mentioned. Maybe just 2 of them. I don't know. No, we've given 3. I like the Cowboys getting 3.5 at the Giants with Matt Castle. And I like the Jets getting 8 against the Patriots. So Cardinals, Cowboys, and Jets, we've already discussed. 2 of those teams are underdogs on the road. 1 is a favorite at home. The other 2 picks that I like, 1, the Detroit Lions. You look at this game and you're like, oh, what a boring football game. Why would I watch this? But the Detroit Lions are 2-point underdogs at home against the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota's got the worst offense in the NFL in terms of yards per play, just 5.0 yards per play. I just don't see a reason why the Lions are underdogs at home. You know, if anything, this is a pick 'em, and instead we're getting a couple points, and I like the Lions to win outright here. So I just think you throw the ball up to Calvin Johnson, good things happen. I do think he's the best player on the football field, with the possible exception of Adrian Peterson, but I like the Lions as pick number 4. And the last pick, and now I'm searching down because, of course, it's always hard. Oh, yes, the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons are giving 5 at Tennessee. Tennessee does absolutely nothing well. Advanced stats-wise, when you delve in deep, they do nothing well. So whether it's Marcus Mariota or Zach Mettenberg behind center, I like the Falcons giving 5 on the road. I don't think the Titans will be able to keep up with the Falcons. By the way, very strange stat in this game. This is the 4th straight home game for the Titans. They've lost 8 straight at home. It's amazing that they even have 4 straight home games. It's amazing they've lost that many in a row at home. I like Atlanta as the 5th pick.
Superb. Thank you, Mr. Gil Alexander. Make sure you check out those Beating the Book podcasts. At Beating the Book is Gil's Twitter handle, and Gil tweets out all his podcasts at that handle. Gil, the Megapod is out and online now. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Superb. Thank you once again, Gil, and looking forward to catching up next week.
Dave, always a pleasure. Enjoy the Jaguars, sir.
Thank you, Gil. You keep sending them. You keep sending them. Thank you, Gil.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.